Hi, welcome to Webcamps TV. I'm your host, Brady Gaster, and today I'm going to introduce you again to Mads Christensen, who was on our show recently talking about some of the new features for web developers in Visual Studio 11 beta. And since that time, he's actually done another show with Robert Green, and he had a lot of questions during that show and after that show in the comment section and through email asking him about the Web Essentials stuff. So he wants to kind of dive in deeper with that and talk about how VS 11 is going to make CSS less painful.
Yes, a lot less painful.
A lot less painful.
Yes. Yeah, so you know, the Web Essentials extension for Visual Studio 2010 basically brought a whole new set of features to Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have been asking about, so when does that make it into Visual Studio 11? And for beta, it did not. But what we've been working on for the, you know, since beta, basically is, you know, partly to get some of the Web Essentials features in, but also think about some brand new features. So these will come in, you know, they will be there at some point. Some of them are still pretty experimental, but some of them are almost done. So we're going to take a look at all of them, and hopefully, at the end of this, you will agree that CSS has become a lot less painful to work with.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's get started. Dive sure. right in.
Yeah. So I think we should start with the colors. So we did a lot of work in beta with how you work with colors in the CSS editor. The way that we have the color picker and all that. But that we could do more. And so one of the things that is very noticeable right now is that we have these color glyphs, as you can see in the CSS editor right now.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever you have a color, if it's hex, name color, RGB, HSL, whatever format, we show you what the color is. And if you can click on it, and it will show you the color picker. So before, it was actually not possible using the mouse to invoke the color picker. But now it is. So that's a lot easier. And we've introduced some brand new things as well. So a concept that we know from C# is smart tags. Small little things you can do to individual keywords. And they show up, like if I select the color here, you can see that little glyph showing up.
It's a little dot right there.
Yeah. I can hover it, and it folds out. And I can now convert colors to different formats. So I can, you know, do whatever I want. I can to any of these things. So this was also in Web Essentials. It didn't work nearly as well as it does here. But it's one of those features that now made it into Visual Studio. So another thing that has been pretty difficult, but it's a very common thing to do, is that to have a color and then just want to lighten it up a little bit or darken it a little bit. That's sort of difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you could just very simply, using Control and arrow up and down, change it like this?
I love it. That's
yeah.
fantastic.
So that makes it really, really simple. And so we did this for colors and thought that was kind of cool. But what about numbers, like here? So if I do Control and do the arrow keys up and down on a number, you can see here it goes up and down. Now, in this case, I'm using it for manipulating an RGB value. And RGB goes from 0 to 255. And because we know that, we will make sure that it stops at 255. Right? It knows these things. If I do it to a percentage, I'm not allowed to go below 0. I can, of course, use page up to do a factor 10 and page down. So that has become a lot
wow.
easier to very quickly do these things, conversions and so on. But there is one scenario that we've had a lot of feedback on, and that is in my team environment, in my company, whatever, I have a designer that gives me a design manual or some sort of palette that I can use. And then I have to kind of follow those rules of those allowed colors. But I never had any help to enforce it or to just help me with it. So if I open the color picker here, normally what we did and what you have in beta is that this color list that you show that's shown right here is the previously used colors in the same document. And it's then followed by the standard WebSafe rainbow colors. So there's like two color providers in there. But if we take a look at this one, there's only one. And there's no rainbow colors. This is a different color palette that we see here. And that's because that in the root of my project, let's take a look, I have a file called palette.css, which opens here. And I can now define colors. So these are the colors that I'm allowed to use, and they show up in IntelliSense for me as well. So the notion of previously used colors might not be that relevant anymore because I have a fixed set of colors that I can use.
Art directors all over the world just screamed and threw confetti. Fantastic.
Yeah. But, you know, here I have... So this is actually using... To make this work, I actually just use the extensibility point that we already have in Visual Studio for writing custom CSS schemas. So I've just invented my own. And you see here we get IntelliSense for this specific thing. If I go into global, I'm only presented with color because that's the only thing I allow in here. But this caters basically for probably most scenarios, but you have scenarios where you say, I'm going to allow all these colors, but then for background colors, I want to allow these two additional ones. So how do we do that? Well, if I dive into the specific here, you can see that the globals are allowed to use anywhere. They show up in the color picker everywhere. But if I'm dealing with something that has to do with the background, like background color or just the background CSS property, I'm going to allow all the globals, all the things defined up here, and then whatever I have defined right here. And the same goes for the color property and then anything that has to do with the border. And if we take a look, we'll see that for background, I have these two additional red and green, right? These are for background. But if I go to border, let's say, what did it say? Yellow and gray. So if I open the border one, I get the yellow and gray.
Nice.
Right?
So globals is everything, and then you can like basically specify which elements get additionals.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So you have full control. And what we haven't done so far is to actually create the validation around it. But you could imagine that you would actually want to call out an invalid color. You're using an unspecified color that, you know, your designers will not like. Mm-hmm. You know, so we can do that as well. This is very experimental. So right now it is a naming convention. If you have palette.css in the root of your project, it kicks in. But that might not be the final solution for adding color palettes. You could have scenarios where you have multiple palettes and so on. But so this is an experiment. But the whole idea is to make it much easier to work with color. Okay.
Which developers usually aren't very good at anyway. And
well, it's just a little bit annoying.
It is. Really. It is. It
yeah.
is.
It's cumbersome. You don't get much help.
Right.
It's manual work, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
If the design was left up to a developer, it would be all white, gray, black, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So this kind of gives us the ability to not have to think about it.
Exactly.
It's good.
Exactly.
It's good.
Okay, so other things we've done is some IntelliSense work. So we've had a lot of feedback on our user voice, aspnet.uservoice.com, about having better IntelliSense for selectors. And let me demonstrate here. So I'm going to write a new selector, and I'm going to hit the div. And notice here, you now get full IntelliSense for HTML elements. Let's do div, and then let's do a class, and it's going to give me IntelliSense for whatever class I've defined within this style sheet. And the same goes for ID. Oh, I don't have any IDs in here. But the idea is the same. You get a list of all the IDs that you have used.
Mm-hmm.
But you also get pseudo-selector IntelliSense. So this part is actually already done. It will be in the upcoming releases of Visual Studio. And that's let's go with this guy. Now, I actually also get full IntelliSense within here, for in this case, HTML or classes, whatever,
right?
So finally, we get a very full IntelliSense for our selectors. So I can very easily just write, and they're correct.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they're spelled correct.
I would almost argue it's artificial IntelliSense.
Ah, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Sorry.
So I'm not going to open the curly. And what we're doing here is that we automatically insert the closing one, but it just stays where it is. And if I manually close it, it kind of just types over. So you see here, I don't end up with two closing curlies,
cool.
Right? So that's a very, very neat little thing. Mm-hmm. So muscle memory, we've done a lot of work with muscle memory, making sure that whatever you're used to doing in C# and in JavaScript and whatnot, it kind of works in here as well. So that's a fun thing. If we go down here, I have an image. Again, this has been one of the big asks and one of the most popular things of the Web Essential extensions for 2010. I can hover any image reference and it shows up. Right? Makes it really easy for me to see what's going on in my style sheet here. I can also take this and we have this smart tag appearing. I can do control dot like in C#, and I can now embed this as a base64 encoder string. So this is very commonly used for layout specific images that appears everywhere in your, you know, on all pages of your website.
Mm-hmm. Or sprites or something like that.
Yeah, well, this is another way of kind of inlining images so that you don't have to create the request to the actual image and bring it back. So you can actually now delete your images in your Solution Explorer if you wanted to, because the image is now embedded directly in here. And the overhead of serving this for a browser is actually not that, it's like a few percent, because we're gzipping everything by default on an ASP.NET website. So even though the string adds more than the bytes actually are when you do the string representation, because we gzip it, it gets back to almost the same.
And then you've got e-tags so that you don't have to re-download the CSS every single time. So like once you've got it, you've got all the images at the same time.
It's cached and everything, right?
Nice. That's fantastic.
So that's a really, really easy way to optimize your website. But what if you want to go the other way around? What if I have this and I want to save it as an image? Well, again, this one is a little bit clever. It knows that now we're dealing with a base64 string, so I can save to a file. And it just pops up, and it knows it's a PNG file. Mm-hmm. It doesn't know what name to give it, so let's call it Brady. And this is what we end up with. So we can go both ways now when doing base64 encoding.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I would have never thought of that. That's just mind-boggling. That's so cool.
Yeah, it is one of those things that people never really
That's fantastic.
Think so much about. Yeah. But, it's supported in IE8 and up, so it's not a new feature. So, okay. So in beta, we did a lot of work around vendor-specific properties. We have snippets that makes it really, really easy for you to add vendor-specific properties.
Mm-hmm.
Just to give you an example here, let's do a transform. I tap, and I get all the vendor specifics. But even though that's really, really helpful, and it alleviates a lot of the pains I have by remembering all the different vendor specifics that I need to make my site cross-browser, there are other stuff that we need to take care of. And especially if you already have an existing website, then you're not creating all your new properties and using the snippets. So how would you actually know whether or not your document conforms to the browser compat thing? So we created some new errors. And they're actually not errors. They're more like they're green instead of red, like the green squiggly. Mm-hmm. And because they're happy errors. They're not like, oh, it's not a syntax error or anything.
It's a warning.
Well, we actually put them in messages.
Message.
Yeah.
It's a guideline.
Yeah. Because, you know, nothing is wrong. Right. But, yeah, still. Anyway. But we also help you out. So this error says, I'm missing the WebKit specific one. I only have the Mozilla, I don't have the WebKit. So the reason why it asks me to add the WebKit specific one is that because somewhere else in my style sheet, at the bottom actually, I have a WebKit vendor a prefix. And if you already, if you've done it once, if you use the WebKit or Mozilla, whatever vendor's prefix once, then the editor assumes that you want to target that browser in your entire CSS file, which is very reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it says, hey, you want to add the WebKit one. If I don't want to use WebKit, it will never bother me about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I can do now is that I can just open the smart tag and say add missing vendor specifics. And here we go. And it actually looks in that rule to see which ones you've already got, and then just adds the one that you're missing.
But it wouldn't tell you, hey, you're missing WebKit if you don't have WebKit
Correct.
Somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, maybe you just want to target a specific browser for whatever reason.
Right.
And you don't care about the other.
An intranet situation.
An intranet, yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so it makes perfect sense that we then don't bother you with it. So the very important thing is we do not want you to ignore any warning that we give you. And that means that we have to create warnings that are actually valid
mm-hmm.
and really helpful to you. Because we don't want to end up in a situation where we just give you so many warnings that at some point you just turn them off. Because then we don't help you, and, you know, we really want to.
Of course,
yeah.
Of course.
So, but you see here, this is not enough. This is a very, very common problem that we see right here. Let me hover this one. It says, place the standard property below its vendor-specific implementation. Over and over again, when we look at real-world CSS, this is a very common practice to get wrong. You always want the standard implementation to be last. And the reason for that is, if I have, in this case, let's say the Mozilla, in this case, is after the standard, then when Firefox reads this, the newer Firefoxes understands both. But there might be difference in how they implement it, the Mozilla-specific and the standard-specific. And you always want the standard-specific to win.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you always want the standard-specific to be at the end, so it overrides whatever was before it.
No more important usage.
No, right. Yeah. So, and again, we help with that. So you get another smart tag here. Move property below last vendor specific. And it rearranges everything, and now you're good to go.
Wow.
So that's kind of the goal we want to do. We want to flag some things that you could optimize, you could do better, you could, you know, that would help your website. But then we want to offer you a way to do it. We want to offer you a way out. And that's what we're doing here.
It's fantastic.
Yep.
It's awesome. Almost like you're mind reading from a CSS file.
I know.
It's fantastic.
and there's even more we can do.
Okay. Such as
best practices. So let's just click this one. It takes us to the right place. So, again, this is a friendly error. There's nothing wrong with what you see here, but it's not really that good either. We could improve this. So the problem that we see here is that I have a height attribute in my style rule, but I also have a display in line. So if you have a display in line, height and width down here has no effect. This is cross-browser anywhere. So let's just remove them, right? So in this case, we don't offer you any help because actually what this says, it says just remove them. So let me do that. Here we go. And now we have something here with a float. And the problem here is that the float is already defined. It's up here. So I have them twice.
Right.
Now that's perfectly okay, because there are a lot of situations where you have a property that you need to repeat once for each browser, because the value of that property is targeted different browsers. Right. So background image, if you want to do a linear gradients,
mm-hmm.
you need to have 5 or 6 background properties, and that's all good. Why it's flagged here is because that they're not next to each other. There are different properties between them. So if I take this guy and move it up here, we no longer have any problems because we say, okay, this could be a browser-specific scenario, mm-hmm. so we don't want to give you any advice here because that's probably okay.
Right.
But, you know, in the case that these two would be the same, let's see here, the validation kicks in here. If they have the same value, then clearly it's not needed.
Right.
One of them should go.
Sure.
And that's
sure.
exactly what what we say here. We say the exact same value is present, so remove one of them.
Cool.
Yeah. So let me do that.
Not bad. It's very non-obtrusive. It's not an offensive error. It's just sort of
exactly
advice.
Yeah, and we might end up in a place where we say we don't even want to squiggle them in the editor. We just want to have them in the list, in the error list, in the messages.
Okay.
Because they really are like hints and guidance and nothing more than that. They don't ruin anything. They don't harm anyone. Whereas the browser compatibility issues, they could potentially be harmful. So we might want to squiggle those. Okay. You know, it kind of depends.
Or you could just put something in the options, turn it on or off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's move on to fonts. And here, I have some fonts. And if I hover them, again, people who've been using Web Essentials have seen this before. Now it's actually much more precise because of the Visual Studio 11 CSS editor is much more precise. Mm-hmm. So it gives you like a really nice way to see what the fonts look like. But it does even more than that, because up here, I have defined a font face embedding. Right? So I have some font files mm-hmm. that I now want to use on my website. So this is a CSS3 thing. Actually, it works in IE5, but it's now the CSS3 standard. And it's starting to be picked up by a lot of websites are starting to do this, because it really makes a huge difference mm-hmm. to a website. So this is becoming popular. And of course,
fewer images, more fonts, fewer downloads.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But you see here, we call the font up here font name. So that should, of course, appear in my IntelliSense list as well. Right?
Wow.
You would expect such a thing. You know, it's a small detail, but it's a really, really important one. Really, don't let the IDE get in your way, mm-hmm. but help you out as much as possible. And so you don't have to think about these things. They're just here. And here's the thing that this is going to look, this is very early, so it looks a bit weird. Pick from file. So if I click this guy, it's going to open up, and I have some fonts in here. So I have the same font in two different formats, and we still need different formats for all the browsers. It doesn't really matter which one I click on. So what you didn't see was that this line was introduced, and both of them were actually added, and we now reference it from within here. So you get a seamless experience of adding a font to your document.
Wow.
Yeah, so that, you know, because it's really difficult to write these things yourself, the font face embedding. And also, so, you know, if you have fonts and you just drag them in, the exact same thing happens. So there's a consistency between the different entry points to the same feature.
Awesome.
It does the exact same thing. It does what you expect to do.
Mm-hmm.
So that should help that scenario a lot as well. And then I think the final thing here is looking through a lot of real-world CSS files actually shows that the same selector is used many, many times over and over again in the same document, which is kind of weird. Because why add that extra level of noise? Why add the extra complexity? You could argue you should refactor. If you have two selectors that are the same, you should refactor them, put them into one, and, you know, move the properties over so you only have one.
Right.
It's just good practice to, you know, clean up a little bit. But again, we see it over and over again, even in the world's biggest sites out there, it happens. So let's look at these two. Now, if I do this, now I have two completely identical selectors, right? And it says simply, you know, this thing is already defined on line 30. You should probably consolidate the two.
Mm-hmm.
This has been really, really difficult, if not impossible, to find these duplicates before. Because a lot of times, as I had originally, I did this, you know, have, you know, something right here, right? They are no longer duplicates. because this scenario is perfectly fine, that you do have maybe a global style rule, and then you have more precise ones where you add stuff to the selector, like in this case. So we don't want to make any confusion here. We just want to say, if they're exactly the same, we're going to flag them out. And as I said, funny enough, this is a very, very common malpractice. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So,
I've seen it.
Yeah,
I think I've done it.
Yeah, no, I think we all have without even knowing it.
Exactly.
So actually, what all these rules that we have, all of a sudden, you could think of it as a maybe even as a FX cup for style sheets, but in the very friendly way. It's not intrusive. It doesn't really bother you. It only exists to help you out, and that's a big difference. But it also makes it much easier to catch common mistakes. And we hear from so many developers that CSS is one of the most difficult things to do. A lot of people just really hate CSS because they don't know if it's going to work. They do something, and then maybe it works in IE, but not in Firefox, maybe the other way around. But they don't know as they write it. So if we can give hints and automate all this stuff, that should be a huge help.
Should be.
Yeah. So hopefully, CSS will gain its glory.
I'd say so.
And get back to be that first-class citizen. And hopefully, hopefully a lot more people will enjoy CSS as much as I do.
I'm definitely going to like it a lot more now. You've just taken away a lot of the pain from me. I mean, some of these things are errors that I've made many times. You mentioned how some of the larger sites out there have crazy CSS rules.
Yep.
I've seen, I know of one site in particular that I've measured the size of the CSS file and it's over a megabyte.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of different repeats, kind of like this. And if they had advice, they might not have that problem.
Sure.
One thing I'm wondering is there a functionality, whereas right now I see these two, maybe I should just submit this to User Voice so that he'll get it officially. If I were to do the control period trick here, would it just consolidate these two together automatically for me? Like if I had three headers, it would just pop them all in the same place?
It would not.
Okay.
It is something that I'm looking into right now.
Okay.
But there might be some issues with
ordering.
If you have the same property defined both with different values, then what? How do we merge?
Right.
What's the resolution going to be? Maybe nothing.
Okay.
Maybe it's just going to be flagged by the, hey, you have a duplicate value.
Right.
Perhaps. Yeah.
Okay.
The one you were referring to is this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. That's fantastic.
So there is now an easy way to target IE version specifically for your rules.
Awesome.
It's all completely standards, valid W3C valid hacks, but they are hacks, and they say, let's say I want to make this rule headers.headers only visible to IE7 and above. And so it injects this thing right here.
Gotcha. So no more having to remember which hack to put where.
No. And you just invoke the smart tag again, and it says remove, right? And we're back to where we came from.
Awesome.
Again, this is something that people using Web Essentials have grown accustomed to. Mm-hmm. So
this is wonderful.
Yeah.
This is really going to make it a lot less painful.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. And, there is a mechanism in Visual Studio that allows us to actually add features even after we ship RTM, the final Visual Studio 11.
Mm-hmm.
So we will actually be able to update features, CSS 3, HTML 5, and JavaScript schemas to always be up to date with whatever the W3C supports or whatever browsers support. We can update these things. But we can add features as well. So this is the first time in Visual Studio history where we have a mechanism to actually add new value to Visual Studio after we release.
It's wonderful.
So, all these features hopefully will make it into the RTM version, but maybe not all of them. But we will now have a mechanism to ship them afterwards, and people will get them automatically. But that also means that all the feedback and requests that we get right now on ASP.NET UserVoice.com, we actually start implementing them right now and play around with them and come up with good solutions. And they might make it a couple months after RTM, 6 months maybe, who knows? But it means that when we ship, we're not locked down and you have to wait for 2-3 years for the next feature. So, give us all the feedback you have and we'll make it happen.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. So right now, actually, we're actually going through the user voice, and we're just picking them up one by one.
Awesome.
So there's really going to be a lot more features after beta that you haven't seen. You have seen a lot of them right here. There will be a lot more for HTML as well. So so go give us some feedback, and if there's anything you want, we'll make it happen.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Basically, the message is we're listening. So go to User Voice, tell Mads what it is you want him to build for you, and he'll go lay in this brand new hammock on our sunny day here in Redmond and actually build some features into it, because we have an extensibility model built into Studio. We can actually make it better as we go.
Yep.
It's fantastic. Well, do you have anything else you want to add?
That's it.
Awesome. Well, it's nice to have you back on the show again.
Yeah, it was good
I'm
to
sure
be here.
We'll be talking to one another again whenever RTM or subsequent releases come out, because I know you're just going to have more and more stuff to add.
We're never relaxing. We're always working on new features.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot for your innovations.
Thank you.
Take care, guys.